Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Do you need heavy equipment or farm equipment? Look no further than Southern Equipment and Parts in Laurel. We have a wide selection of new and used equipment from many top brands. We also offer parts, service, and rentals. Whether you're a contractor, farmer, or just need help around the house, we have what you need. Southern Equipment is your one-stop shop for all farm and heavy equipment. Visit us at 5237 Highway 84 West and southernequipparts.com or call 601-651-4555.
Roll free record on my count. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. Roll A, fade up on A.
Southern Miss to the top. You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Eagle Hour. Bob Getty and Kelly Center. We're in the First Bank studio here in Hattiesburg. Luke is out today. We're glad you're with us. Wherever you're tuned in across the Super Talk Network or online, of course, welcome to another edition of the Eagle Hour. Opening segment sponsored by Dickey's Barbecue Pit, proud supporters of our program, and of course Southern Miss Athletics, and a great place for you to take your family for dinner 7 days a week, and also a great place for catering. If you've got a special event coming up for your church, for your business, for your family, be sure you include Dickey's on your list of calls, and Dickey's will cater a meal that we guarantee you will enhance your special occasion. All right, lots coming up this week on the Eagle Hour. We've got Patrick McGee coming on the show tomorrow. Lance Ancar, the new strength coach for Southern Miss football, on the show Thursday. And former Golden Eagle Colin Hest scheduled for the show on Friday. But today we want to kick off the show with a friend of the Eagle Hour and now the new assistant head coach of Southern Miss baseball, Christian Ostrander. And Coach, first of all, thanks for being on the show. You were named the Assistant Coach of the Year in Conference USA, and now the new announcement regarding your role with Golden Eagle Baseball. 2021's been a pretty good year, Coach.
Well, Bob, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, very, very humbled, obviously. I mean, with all that, and, you know, and appreciative, no doubt. But, you know, just take it and then move on, keep working hard, and get ready for the next one. Next year.
Well, there you go. I had a friend ask me yesterday when I told him you were going to be on the program to ask you this question, which I thought was a really good one. You've done such an outstanding job with the pitching staff, developing those kids for the Golden Eagle staff. In your new position as assistant head coach, will that role change in any way, Coach? And what extra duties are added to you now?
Well, no, I don't think anything will change. Obviously, I'll be, you know, right there with those guys and you know, trying to develop the next, you know, Hunter Stanley, Walker Powell, Ryan Ock type guys. But, you know, no, nothing changes. It's just it's an honor and a title. I mean, Coach Barry has something he needs me to do. He knows I'll do, you know, anything and so forth. And, but, you know, for me, it's just, you know, again, I'm very, very humbled and honored and appreciative of that from Coach Barry and administration, Jeremy McClain and so forth, for, you know, feeling comfortable about, you know, putting that title out there.
Well, you just named three kids that have been lost, and two of the three we knew were going to leave because of graduation. Ryan Ock was a question mark, and he really came on this year, and I guess as a result of that, we have now lost him. How big a loss is that for your staff, and were you surprised at all that that he left, Coach?
Well, I wasn't surprised. I mean, you know, he got a good opportunity. It's just, you know, there's obviously a gamble if you don't take that opportunity. Anything can happen, and you know, and we talked very candidly with Ryan, you know, throughout the process, and we let it be known to him. You know, of course, we would love for him to be back, obvious, and but at the same time, we support him and we're proud of him. You know, it's to see where he's come, you know, in his 4 years here to, you know, to where he is now is, you know, that's what you hope all your players get the opportunity to do and realize some of their dreams. So we were very supportive and you know, shook his hand, gave him a hug, wished him the best. And but it is a loss. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's an arm we'd all would love to have back and so forth. But you know, I feel good about, you know, our guys. I really do. I think it's going to be another staff that has some you know, high competition, that some pieces, a lot of pieces, and I look forward to kind of seeing how the cards fall with them.
Coach Oz, this is Kelly Sander. Good afternoon to you, and congratulations on the elevation to associate head coach, and that extra $100,000 that comes with it will probably help, huh?
Absolutely. You nailed it, Kelly. That's it, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, the game of pitching seems to be evolving, and I want to get your views on, from a couple of angles. You see now more in the major leagues. A.J. Hinch with Detroit, the manager of the Tigers, comes to mind. He's got four or five very young, highly drafted pitchers, and he's made no secret about the fact that he is going to limit their number of pitches throughout their careers the first 3 or 4 years until they grow, they get stronger yet as they work into their careers. Do you think that this will be a trend that not only will continue with the major leagues, considering how much financial resources go into these young, high draft picks, and do you see it working its way down to colleges where you and some of your colleagues will be much more conscious of pitch counts in an effort to keep guys healthy longer?
The first part of your question, the major leagues, I think it's obvious. I think, what you said there, the investments they're making in these guys and the financial commitments that they need to protect them, because they want to get, length out of those guys and get the years in with them and stuff. And to do that, sure, there's got to be some things taken into consideration with the workload and so forth. And guys are just, throwing the ball harder and think, it's just so much more, intent, violence a little bit, if you want to call it that, in pitching that, you better monitor it. If it's higher intent and higher workload, then it better be a lesser amount of volume, at some point, or something's not going to give and so forth. As far as colleges, I think, to each his own. I think everybody's different, maybe pitching coaches or coaches, philosophies on pitch count. I would say that I feel like I'm one that's always kind of erred on the side of caution with the arms, and very, very few times do our guys get over that 100 mark. And if they do, it's, in a start, it's depending on how they get there and so forth. So I think you got to monitor it and, knock on wood, hope you keep guys healthy, is because some of the decisions you make and not overdoing them.
And one of the big arguments that seems to be going on at the younger levels too now is it's a chicken versus the egg argument. You get a lot of people that say that college coaches and indeed the pros really focus on velocity when they ought to think of more about getting guys out. And I use that as an argument with Greg Maddux, who's probably the most prolific pitcher in our lifetime, certainly was not a hard thrower. Accuracy, obviously, changing speeds and so on. But there are those that argue that with the focus on velocity, that's what's causing more and more Tommy John surgeries for kids at a younger age. Of course, I contend it's just plain overuse. Kids need to put the ball down at some point during the year. But I wanted to get your view on all that, velo versus just getting people out.
Well, I mean, the getting people out, I mean, that's the name of the game. And you can have the hardest thrower and the guy with the best whatever over there sitting, over there on your bench. And if he can't throw it over the plate and command, and stuff, he's not going to help you a lot, and stuff, versus that guy that knows just how to pitch. He might have a lighter stuff or, repertoire or whatever, but he just knows how to pitch and plus and minus and change speeds. And lo and behold, he's a guy you're going back to, giving the ball to get out. But so when you can find the guy that has the stuff and the pitch ability, and so that's when you get those special ones and, stuff that really take off. But yeah, I mean, as for me I always tried, and I've said this before on the show, I always try to err on the side of pitchability over just stuff. I'd rather get a guy that knows what he's doing, knows what his body's doing, knows how to command the baseball, and then help him grow, help him evolve into a more powerful pitcher, maybe let the velocity grow or whatever. But versus getting one that has all the velocity and then trying to teach him how to pitch when he has no feel, that's tough to do.
And that's the difference between being a thrower and a pitcher.
100%. Yeah, I mean, pitchers, a pitcher's a guy that knows what he's doing intentionally. He's throwing it to this spot intentionally, and throwers are just kind of hoping to get it over that plate and, and not really working halves or thirds or up or down or whatever. So, for sure.
Coach, it does seem, and I'll go back maybe 10 years following Golden Eagle baseball, it seems like 10 years ago, if you saw the clock show a kid throwing 91, 92 miles an hour, it's kind of like a whoa moment. But in the last few years, it just seems like almost everybody is throwing that speed. Why have we seen such an increase in velocity from college pitchers?
Well, I'll tell you my theory. Well, one, I do think there's a lot more resources out there. I think there is programs, weighted ball programs, the resources that used for arm strengthening, arm care, maintenance and stuff. I think that's grown, and I think there's a part. I think those are tools that helps with that. I don't think that's the only thing by any means. I think, for me, and I might be the only one out there, and people might think I'm crazy, but I had a coach tell me this years ago and said, Oz, if you want to throw hard, then try to throw hard. And there's a lot of truth to that. But guys that try to throw hard sometimes forget how to command it and this and that. But they realize, oh, I can't throw it harder if I try. I feel like that it's just become now where it's almost like the banister effect or whatever with the sub four minute mile, whatever it was. Once it was done once, it started getting, repeatedly broken and so forth. And I think now it's just become more of a norm. Guys are trying to throw harder and realize they can, and they're just kind of letting it hunt a little bit too. I might be totally wrong. That might have nothing to do with it. But I just feel like that it's just becoming the more norm. And you get aboard with it, and guys are, trying to, have that kind of intent when they throw and stuff. So I think there's some of that. But I think a lot of it, though, is definitely the resources that are out there to help guys, get healthy, get strong, and so forth. And obviously mechanics and body and weight room and all that stuff is important.
Coach, short break. Got some more questions for you if you can hang around 3 more minutes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Coach Christian Ostrander, pitching coach and now assistant head coach, Golden Eagle Baseball, on the Eagle Hour. We'll be right back.
Southern Miss to the top. To the top. You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
And we're glad you are. This segment sponsored by Campus Bookmart and campusbookmart.net on Hardy Street. What a great place for Southern Miss apparel. 12 months out of the year right now. They got some summer stuff still there, and football apparel is coming in daily, so make sure you check out Kathleen and her great staff at Campus Bookmart and online at campusbookmart.net.
Hey, Bob, can I talk about Campus Bookmart just a quick second?
Yeah.
Getting some swag ready for the football season, the nice golf shirts like you have on now. I was going to get a yellow one, and then I was going to match it with some yellow shorts, and my son said, Dad, don't do that. You will scare kids. They will think you are Big Bird.
I can see that, Kelly. I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. A really big bird, too. We're saying that literally. A big bird.
Yes.
Right. We're talking to Christian Ostrander, baseball coach at Southern Miss. And, Coach, we appreciate you hanging on. I got several things that I wanted to ask you about. First, I think I know what the answer to this is, but are you at all surprised with success that Nick Sandlin is achieving with the Cleveland Indians?
No, not at all. I mean, no, it's been fun to watch, man, and that stuff. Like I said, it works. It's there, and everybody knew it, I think. And all he needed was just stay healthy and get that opportunity. And he's doing it, man. That's just some dirty stuff. It's funny, you know, after played here, you see guys talk to coaches years later, and they still talk about, like, man, I remember this game or that game and that guy, and just. They said it all then. We knew he was a big leaguer then, So it's not a surprise, man. Not at all.
What was different about Nick Sandlin as a college pitcher than, there are a lot of good college pitchers in the country, but what made Sandlin different, Coach?
He was probably one of the fiercest competitors I've ever coached. And what I mean by that, he would get in such a zone mentally and just the look in his eye and locked in that he absolutely hated the hitter. And wanted to embarrass him. I mean, quite frankly, so he had just had that was instilled in him. That's who he was. And obviously the stuff was tremendous, but you can have tremendous stuff without that instinct, and you're not going to be great. And he sure did.
It was easy for Nick Sandlin to get mad too, Bob, because just about every guy was macking on his girlfriend.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah. And Coach, I think I was right now based on what you say. I used to, when I was watching him at, I would almost observe that if somebody did get a hit on him, it just really ticked him off. And it looked mad in his facial expression. and he seemed to really punish the next batter that came up.
I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, he took it personal, and like I said, he was out to bury that dude and embarrass him, pretty, you know, so to speak. And you know, that's a guy I can remember vividly. You know, after every time a pitcher comes in off the field on the bench, you know, we'll go up to him, we'll have a little correspondence and stuff or whatever, and just the look, the in the eye and the face, you can learn a lot about where your guy's at on that. And that guy, you know, he had it every time. I mean, he. Until he was taken out of the game or the game was over, that's when he finally maybe exhaled a little bit.
Well, I'm going to take you back to one day in particular, and that was the week that Mississippi State came here to open the season and went on to go to the World Series that year. And you sort of surprised everybody with the announcement that Sandlin was going to start, and he absolutely dominated that Mississippi State team. Were you surprised at all by the degree of domination he could exercise over a Mississippi State in his first start?
I mean, you're going to think I'm probably lying to you, but no, I mean, I wasn't. I mean, we saw that really, you know, that whole leading up to that season and starting to, you know, work him towards starting, you know, every scrimmage that we would do. And I know a scrimmage is different than a game, but not for that guy, you know. But, you know, he would be getting his pitch count up, and his, you know, I mean, getting his innings up, but the pitch count staying down, the stuff is staying strong. And we thought, well, here we go. And it didn't matter which hitter stood in that box. I mean, you know, he was going to, his stuff was going to play and work. So, but it was awesome. I remember that very, very well. And, you know, that was really special. And it just kind of started, you know, a great season. And, you know, for us and for him individually, I mean, good grief, what a year he put together that year.
Coach, I want to ask you a recruiting question as we continue our conversation with Coach Christian Ostrander of the Southern Miss baseball team. One question that parents ask me all the time is as kids tend to specialize more in one sport, which I'm not necessarily a big fan of. But when you have at the high school level kids that are known as POs, which are pitchers only, as opposed to guys who pitch and play another defensive position and hit, statistically, is there any data that would indicate which is the way to go if they had a choice? Would you rather have a PO from high school, or would you rather have a position player, or does it matter at all?
Well, you know, I don't think it matters so much. I mean, you know, like personally, I like athletic guys on a mound, you know. And so if a guy's a shortstop or whatever, and you know, when we sign guys like that, got guys coming in like that that's really athletic in the field and he can hit and do those things, it's probably going to translate over to that mound too. You know, athleticism and you know, a fluid, you know, delivery and stuff like that and stuff. So I think it's an attractive thing. I like it. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to, you know, discriminate against a PO guy that doesn't do any of that, just pitches and he's good. You know, I'll take him too. But you know, I do like the guys that that can do multiple things. I just think there's something about that too. It's the athleticism part of it. And and I think, you know, guys that are athletic, it's easier to control the body and make the body do what you want, which is, you know, the heart and soul of pitching a baseball, making your body do what you want it to do, you know, consistently.
Speaking of shortstops that pitch, you brought a shortstop in to pitch in the conference tournament that created a bit of a stir. Will we see that youngster on the mound more next year, you think, Coach?
100%. Not only, as long as he's healthy, there ain't no doubt he'll be out there. And you know, Dustin's, you know, he's a fine pitcher. And I think you would have seen Dustin a lot more over the last 2 years if, you know, maybe our infield structure was a little different or maybe a little more depth. But we feel like we've got some of those pieces coming in that we're going to have comfort in being able to pull them off short and let them get on that mound a lot more.
Well, one thing that's going to change next year, too, is you're going to go back to a normal season, hopefully, and I think I'm right about that, where you have a three-game weekend series, and therefore you get to play more midweek games. I think the lack of midweek games, from a fan perspective, it seemed to me that the lack of midweek games sort of hurt us a little bit toward the end of the year because some of your relief guys just really hadn't had a whole lot of time on the mound when it came time to call on them. Are you looking forward to getting back to more midweek games and using those games to develop the depth of your pitching staff?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's very, very important. And I think last year it really was tough trying to manage that. I mean, you would find us here on Tuesdays or Wednesdays simulating a game, which is great, but is it the same? No, it's not. And I agree. I think when we got down towards the end there, especially when you're playing five games in 3 or 4 days or whatever, and a couple of those tournaments, I mean, somebody's going to have to step up. And if they haven't been out there in a while and haven't been consistent, I'm not making excuses for them. You know, we don't buy any of that. But it is hard, though. I was a pitcher. I know. I mean, and being out there, getting some consistent rhythm and work is important. So I do look forward to hopefully this year it being, you know, like you said, a three-game set on the weekend and one midweek, sometimes even two midweek games on the week. I think it's going to allow guys to grow a little bit more and prepare them for, you know, postseason play.
But the other thing that made it difficult, I would imagine, for you guys to manage your pitching talent is you didn't have really any injuries this year.
No.
Normally, injuries are part of that puzzle. You're down 3 or 4 guys because of injuries. It's not as difficult to manage. But really, what a year for avoiding injuries this year. Man, it was fantastic.
100%. And that's, you know, you hold your breath every year.
Right.
Because that's usually part of the game. But that was that. You're right. That added something to it. We stayed healthy. And you had starting pitching that really went deep, you know. I mean, which is a great thing, too. But there can be some downfalls of some of those things, just like we discussed, with guys not getting consistent work.
And as far as injuries go, where does the strength and agility program that you guys implement in the offseason and indeed, you know, during the season to a lesser extent, where does that fit in to your ability to stay healthy?
Oh, it's crucial. Our strength coach, Todd Makovica, and his assistant, Matt Gabriel, they do a phenomenal job. And Sven Pearson, our trainer, does a phenomenal job, you know, with guys. And the things that, you know, there's always things that pop up, but stuff that doesn't keep them off the field is what we're talking about. But, you know, what our strength coaches do with our guys, they invest in them. And that awesome weight room facility that we have, and our guys are strong, they're flexible, they're mobile, and that helps keeping you healthy. And we're very fortunate to have those guys, you know, doing what they do for us.
Just a few seconds left, Coach. I know Jeremy McClain was an outstanding college pitcher at Delta State. In fact, I think the second winningest all-time pitcher in Division II history. Has Jeremy ever come out on the field, got on the mound, and does he still have his stuff?
You know, I tell him every time I see him, it's just time for him to get back out there and throw some, and he laughs about it and then shrugs and says, I guarantee he could. But no, he comes around a good fit, and that dude could pitch. He could really, really pitch.
And with him being the boss too, Bob, Jeremy McClain being the boss, I would guess no matter how badly he threw an opening pitch, Coach Hotshiner would say, "Man, that was beautiful."
Yeah, I'd tell him, that was 93, man. Good job. Good
hey,
job.
Coach, we really appreciate your time. Thank you for everything you do for our baseball program, and we look forward to talking to you again really soon.
All right, fellas. Thank y'all.
All right. Christian Ostrander, everybody. Assistant head coach, Southern Miss Baseball. Pitching guru coach. We'll be back.
Southern Miss to the top.
I want to thank Christian Ostrander for joining us in the first half of the show. Great conversation with the pitching coach at Southern Miss, now the assistant head coach. This segment sponsored by a place Kelly and I know very well, 4th Street Bar and Grill. Got great plate lunches 5 days a week. How much are those lunches, Kelly?
They're $8.95, and they've been $8.95.
Forever.
Yeah, for a long time. And that includes your drink.
Yeah.
So
tax everything.
Right. Right.
So $8.95, you get the best plate lunch in Hattiesburg. Go down there in the evenings. You get fantastic poor boy shrimp sandwiches and roast beef sandwiches, all kinds of really great food. And your favorite game's always on the TV. And Slade and those guys are just fantastic. We really appreciate our friendship with Slade.
We need to go down there and shoot some more pool, Bob.
Yeah, it'd be great.
A little closer to the football season, Maybe go down and play.
Well, I guess the one thing that they won't have on TV are the Olympics because nobody's watching them.
Are the ratings that bad?
The worst in the 33-year history of them televising the Olympics. That's all
I wonder, though, if part of it is because none of it's live. because of the time differential.
I think that may be part of it.
You know, because you already know the results if you're following the news at all. Because, you know, when the things are going on in Tokyo, we're sleeping.
Right.
So we're seeing things after the fact. I think that probably has something to do with
it. Now, we're old school guys, but we were talking off the air about, and I forget her name, Simone something, I think, the number one gymnast in the country, has announced that after finishing second in the initial competition that she is not going to compete anymore. She has to recover her mental health. Kelly, is this this is another sign of how soft we're becoming?
Well, I think there was an ankle injury involved, too, and I think she just, you know, added everything up and it just didn't compute. But you would have thought that, and there's a lot of pressure on these Olympic athletes. Now, believe me, I'm not making excuses for Ms. Bowles, but if it's just psychological, if it's just mental, and she's been to the Olympics before, so as far as knowing what to expect, there would be nobody that would know better than she.
Mm-hmm.
But now all of a sudden, mm-hmm. The pressure has gotten to her when there's nobody watching. I mean, there's no fans in the stands.
Right.
So there couldn't be that element. You have to take her at her word, but I think what you're alluding to is because the results were not what she wanted, she was going to pick up her marbles and go home.
Right. And I do want to say I've seen pictures of some of these young people over there who have done well and won medals, and they're wrapping themselves in American flags, and they're representing our country. But the women's soccer team hasn't helped the ratings with all their kneeling and all their antics and not coming out for the opening ceremony. I mean, how much do we have to put up with until we just say collectively enough is enough?
Well, the bottom line is the only way any consumer in America can really voice their dissatisfaction is don't pay money. Well, the fact of the matter is Olympics are quote unquote free on NBC and their family of networks. But if the ratings tank, then they're not going to be able to charge as much for the next time, and the Olympic Committee will be directly affected because they'll get less money from TV rights. And, you know, they'll just have to say, look, you can believe for whatever you want to believe. But I, for example, and you are not, this format of the Eagle Hour is no place for us to be spewing our political beliefs. Because number one, nobody cares.
Right.
And nobody's going to change their mind. All right? So there's a time and a place for everything. And when you're doing what you do, that is not the time to talk politics.
I completely agree. Well, let me tell you who's not talking, and that is the commissioner of Conference USA. All the alignment taking place, Oklahoma and Texas now have made it official. They've asked the SEC to take them in, and that's causing a spiraling effect, as you can imagine, around the country. And it seems like, Kelly, almost every commissioner has had something to say, and if I'm wrong, correct me, but with the exception of Judy McLeod, the conference commissioner for CUSA.
Well, just from the office of the Mountain West commissioner, Craig Thompson, the Mountain West immediately engaged when we became aware of the potential for conference realignment. That has included gathering information over the past few days from across the industry. And earlier today, our board of directors convened to evaluate that intelligence and to discuss our next steps. Our intent is to actively appraise various scenarios, identify potential opportunities, and take actions which can positively impact the trajectory of the Mountain West Conference and our member institutions. We will do our work confidently and only comment further as appropriate or necessary. All right. Bob Bowlesby from the Big 12, who is most directly affected by this move by Oklahoma and Texas, he has called a press conference. About every other commissioner in the country has made some type of statement, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on YouTube. They're talking about realignment and trying to reassure fans of their particular conferences, institutions of their particular conferences, that they are doing everything they can, except crickets from Conference USA.
Right.
No word whatsoever, no reaction, no please, no thank you, no go to you know where, nothing from Conference USA. But are you surprised, Bob Getty?
Well, I'm not surprised, but what I think at this point surprises me is, and you correct me if I'm wrong about this, but the Commissioner of Conference USA serves at the pleasure of the school presidents who are members of the conference. And you got to ask yourself at some point, and I realize these presidents are academic people and they're probably not that into sports, some of them. And you know how academics are, especially at college level. When are they going to step up and say, we've got to have some leadership here. We need to go out and find, candidate X who's going to provide some leadership and help this conference.
An excellent point. And lots of times, Judy McLeod is the whipping dog, you know, for lack of things going on in Conference USA. But she does have a boss, which is the presidents of the institutions. Now, it could be very well that Ms. McLeod is doing things behind the scene that we don't know about, all right, to be fair. But you would think if they were doing things that they would want people to know.
Of course.
That we're taking a proactive approach in trying to sort out this mess, which won't be completely sorted out probably for another 3 years, because Texas and Oklahoma, with their official ask to be invited, won't take place until 2025 that they will actually join. But I would want everybody to know, you know, what's with you know, you can't play all your cards and say we're talking to schools X, Y, and Z, but you can say something. And there was nothing trailblazing in what Commissioner Thompson said from the Mountain West. He just said, look, we're monitoring it, we're meeting, we're talking.
But it was something.
It was something. So we have no idea what Conference USA's approach is here, if there's any at all. And reason would dictate that they are doing something, but if you don't hear from them one way or the other, how do you know?
Right. Well, I thought our guest yesterday, who is a conference commissioner himself, I thought he made a really valid but ominous point, and that is that he anticipates the Big 12 dissipating, and if that happens, then schools like Southern Miss are way down the pecking order to get in any of the bigger conferences. I when he said that, it occurred to me that, you know, what he says makes perfect sense, and that is not good news.
And it does kind of present a glass half empty scenario. But one of the things we've always talked about on the Eagle Hour is that super conference, you know, that they go do their thing. And then everybody that's left, you know, kind of do their thing. And if they don't want to do a playoff, they don't have to. But then that would leave the smaller schools to have a playoff. And it would give other schools an opportunity, you know, to play on a more level playing field when it comes to finances and budgets and things of that nature. So the game has evolved. And Bob Hoge mentioned this yesterday. The landscape of college athletics always seems to evolve. And it always seems to turn out okay. So this is just a huge, heavy page that has to be turned. But we only can hope that Conference USA and that Jeremy McClain and his colleagues, the ADs across the conference, will do what they can to make sure that everybody's nest is feathered properly and appropriately.
Yes, correct. And I guess in time we'll see. Now, I read on the internet, and Lord knows you can believe everything you hear on the internet, especially these fan forums, you know, that's totally accurate, that the Sun Belt may look to expand a couple of teams and that they would be potentially looking at Southern Miss and UAB. You buy into any of that? I've heard nothing that makes me think that's factual.
Not at this point, but anything you would think is on the table at this point, depending on how.
Wouldn't you go for that, to see Southern Miss move to the Sun Belt?
Boy, you hear people say all the time, "Oh, the Sun Belt's a step down."
I don't think so.
You know, but when you look, the Sun Belt has even made a statement, all right, as to where they're going in this thing. So, and the Sun Belt, the new TV contract the Sun Belt got was more lucrative, you know, than before.
Right.
The Sun Belt, with some of the members that it's adding, you know, through baseball, it's made baseball stronger as that conference, and clearly the Southern Miss baseball team is pretty doggone good. So there are certainly some pluses to the Sun Belt, but I just want to hear from Conference USA. You know, maybe call it a child wanting to hear, "Mom, Dad, what are we doing?"
Right.
Just something.
We'll be back.
You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour. The Eagle Hour. Southern Miss to the top.
Welcome back to the Eagle Hour. This segment sponsored by D1 and DBAT, state-of-the-art training facilities for adults engaged in every sport at D1 and DBAT. Great place to take kids that aspire to be better in baseball and softball. They have really state-of-the-art stuff. You were actually there, Kelly, for a remote. It's really hard to adequately describe just how sophisticated the facility is.
And more importantly, you know, the facility is top-notch for sure, but people sometimes think that there's just a generic way of training, but depending on your sport, I mean, they can set up specific programs that will help you be more ideally in shape for whatever sport you're playing. Obviously, a football player is not going to train like a soccer player, for example. So they can tweak all of that to put you right where you need to be, and that's important. And just remember that during the off season, and some of these sports, it seems like they go on and on and on, but you do have to have some downtime. But there are things that you can do to stay in shape, and the guys at D1 and DBAT, they can take care of all that for you. Some other little bit about a lot of things, Bob. Basketball season tickets are now up for sale at Southern Miss. Jay Ladner's teams are already kind of working out over the summertime, and by all reports, they look to be a deeper basketball team than they have before. There's some genuine excitement about the basketball team, you know, this season, making improvements. And Jay Ladner knows that there are some expectations on this team that they do get better. But basketball season tickets open now. From Conference USA, the Outland Trophy watch list for the best lineman for the upcoming season have been announced. Colby Ragland, an offensive lineman from UAB, along with his teammate Sidney Wells from UAB, and Spencer Burford from UTSA. They have been named as Outland Trophy watch list contenders for this coming year. You know, obviously we don't know how the football season is going to shake out, but just by all these nominees and these watch lists, boy, they are sure pumping up Texas San Antonio, aren't they? I mean, if there was a team this year that they think is going to really do some things, just based on all the publicity and things that are coming out, UTSA is the team I think that they think might surprise some people. I'm not so sure about that, but it sure seems like that's who they're banking on.
It'll be another unusual year, and that, like we saw in baseball this year, you're going to have a lot of quote-unquote COVID players in football that got an extra year of eligibility, and I think there's a lot of that at UTSA.
And Southern Miss got some good news where redshirt sophomore Jeremiah McDonald, who is a youngster out of Slidell, Louisiana, who played a little bit at Northwestern in the Big Ten Conference, he is transferring to Southern Miss at Northwestern. He was a linebacker, but it looks like they're going to convert him to a defensive back, and he would be a big defensive back in that backfield for Southern Miss, Jeremiah McDonald. And coming from Northwestern, one thing's for certain.
He's smart.
Yes, I was going to say, he's not going to hurt the grade point average.
No, that's for sure.
At all for the team, so good for them. Wanted to get closer to home and likes the direction Southern Miss is headed. So Jeremiah McDonald from Slidell coming a little bit closer to home as opposed to Evanston, Illinois. So that's a little bit about a lot of things. Olympics will continue through till a week from this Sunday, I guess. Before it's all over with.
We all have football on our mind. It surprises me a little bit to hear that basketball is working out and getting ready. But then you think about it, you know, about halfway through football season, basketball begins. So
some of the basketball games in the past have been scheduled as early as the last week in October.
Right.
Now, they're usually against, you know, schools you've never heard of. Right, you know, exhibitions against the Czechoslovakian national team or whatever, but they are games, you know, nonetheless. Hopefully we're going to get back on this schedule, but you just keep hearing these headlines. Here comes the next, you know, line of COVID, and now the CDC is saying today that even if you're vaccinated, all students K-12 should probably wear a mask.
No.
Oh, boy.
We thought it was behind us, and hopefully it is, but I don't know, Kelly. You're right. And you just wonder, now you got to believe it'll play a role in football when football gets started. I'm sure they're going to test kids every week, and I think we may be in for another season where we hear, well, this many players is not making the trip because of COVID tests.
And we mentioned yesterday that 13 executives in the National Football League, including Indianapolis head coach Frank Reich, have all tested positive for COVID. And so the NFL is contemplating, you know, putting on different colored armbands for the players during the season. And on the sideline, you know, I'm told by guys who cover the NFL, what it would look like is that the non-vaccinated players would be on one 20-yard line at the sideline.
Are you serious?
And the vaccinated players
would be. Are you serious?
Yeah, that they want to keep them that, you know, and that would be an extreme measure if we don't get, you know, control of this thing. So you know, who knows? You know, there's only one thing we know for certain, Bob, that the Washington football team and Cincinnati Bengals probably neither will be in the Super Bowl. We know.
I think that's a pretty safe bet in case you're a gambling person. Yes.
Yeah. You're not going to get real good favorable odds.
There's not going to be that much COVID in the league if those two teams would make it to the finals.
Hey, we don't want to wish anybody badly, but as a Bengal fan, we'll take the W if that's
Cincinnati's best hope.
Not even Obi-Wan Kenobi, a final hope, could help us.
Exactly right. All right. New strength coach for football, Lance Ankar, on the show Thursday. Colin Hess, former player for the Golden Eagles, on the show Friday. Patrick McGee from the Biloxi Sun-Herald joins us tomorrow. We hope you will, too. Until then, Southern Miss.
To the top.
Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. I want to fly like an eagle to the sea.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.